Sinead, you're bringing together the world of books and a book, or an exhibition, I think we're talking about here as well, and music. But it's the gig, really, that you want to talk about in terms of Nick Cave.
Well, I'm a lifelong Nick Cave fan and have interviewed him a few times, and he still manages to change and reinvent himself all the time. Not least, I think, in the last couple of years because of what's gone on in his personal life with the death of his son. And he's coming back to Dublin to play two big gigs in the Three Arena. The first one sold out on May 8th, I think it is, the Friday there's still tickets for. But just before that, in Denmark, there's a big exhibition happening of its handwritten lyrics, lots of artefacts from his life. An artist has painted loads of pictures of him. And to coincide with that, Canongate, the Scottish publisher, are producing a book that's basically all these images. He's also collaborated with a writer called Darcy Stink. She's a very good non-fiction American writer, wrote a very good book about the menopause, of all things. And her and Cave are collaborating on sort of like these asides and sections looking at the work. So he's got the gig, which is going to be two gigs in here in May. There's the book coming out with Canongate in the spring, and then this big exhibition happened in Copenhagen, which I hope might come to here in the UK. I haven't heard that it's going to move, but it'd be really interesting. Lots of portraits of him and photography, but a lot of paint as well. So.
And the fact that the book is called Stranger Than Kindness, which is the name of one of his songs as well, does that give us any hint as to what he might be, you know, what kind of angle he might be taking into the book?
Well, I don't know if anybody, you can sign up for his right-hand letters. I don't know if anybody has done that. You can basically send him a letter publicly via email and ask him about a topic, and he answers pretty much on any. There's no holds barred. He's done it as a tour as well. He did it in the Abbey, where you can ask him about his songs or his music or his son or grief or humour or if he believes in God. And a lot of that has been, a lot of what's come out of those letters, if there's been one unifying theme despite all the diverse topics, is empathy, kindness. Remember, everyone's having a hard time. We're all just in this on this one road together, and it's very difficult. And I think that that's probably something that he's been thinking about. And there's been a lot of, I think, misconceptions about Cave over the years. Anytime I've met him, he's been incredibly nice and polite and funny and quite shy, and not this kind of like dark lord of goth doom that some people have said that about him. So I think he's probably, and I don't think it takes grief or death to make those things happen. I think he's always been like that, but that seems to be, I think, will be a big part of this exhibition.
You're a fan too, clearly, Kate.
Yeah, I think so. And I think I saw him, I was very lucky to go and see him in the Abbey when he took questions, and one of the resounding things that I found from that was he really just wanted to reconnect with people. I think it was his way of therapy after the death of his son. Do you know what I mean? It was just
he did that tour instead of doing interviews. I think
completely,
that was a way of sort of talking to the public but not having to be asked about it necessarily.
That's really brave.
Also engaging. Like for me, I just felt like he very much connected with everybody in the room, and definitely, you know, was not the kind of man that I'd been led to believe. And then I met him afterwards, and exactly that, really, really quite shy, lovely man.
Stranger Than Kindness there from Nick Cave and his gig and book, one of the choices of Sinead Gleeson on this New Year's Day. Sinead, Arlene Hunt, Declan Burke and Kate Brennan-Harding with me in studio, looking forward to 2020 and what it might hold in the cultural world. Now, you mentioned about the possibility of going to sit-down gigs as you approach the tender age of 40, Kate Brennan-Harding.
Yes, yes.
But
I haven't
looking at
any.
looking at your choices, I think you're going to be wearing a lot of wellies
next it's going to be really sunny. It's going to be, you know.
You're a big festivals head. Do you like them up, the wellies, the camping in the wet, all the rest of it?
Okay, being honest, I always have a camper van. I don't mind the wellies, but
you
once I have the camper van,
then,
I'm
you?
Fine.
You're glamping.
Yeah, I don't do the tent. In fact, I've never, ever camped at a festival. I've only ever done the camper van thing. I'm not into the tents situation at all. But yeah, like I have a pick this year, right? Another love story. It's a festival that I went to for the first time in 2019.
And where is it? Where
it's in Killian Manor in County Westmeath in August.
Right.
Now, what happens is, like all festivals, I'm a big fan, Body and Soul, All Together Now, really enjoy them. But this is a really, really unique setting. It's about 1,000 people. And Emmett from Homebeat set it up with a gang of friends. Mm. And the whole ethos of it is that things, we can do this thing better. As in, we can be nicer, we can be fairer, we can be kind to each other. And what happens when you go into Killian Manor is you drive in and you're greeted by a group of volunteers, big smiles on their faces. You're shown where you can camp. It's very gentle. You check in and you go in, and it's got basically an outside arena where there's a beautiful wooden stage, and you'll have an awful lot of Irish music. So last year you had Anna Mica, you had Jape. There was an awful lot of, like, he supports Irish music, which I'm really passionate about. Then you've got the ballroom. And the ballroom, it transforms, so it can be art installations by day. There's harps, there's, you know, all sorts of classical music. And then at night, people like me will DJ. until very late, and it's a big party and everybody gets dressed up.
Isn't there a snog shack or something?
It's the shift shack.
I went the previous year, and it's the smallness of it is what makes it really special.
Completely.
It's not like any other festival.
Only 1,000 people there, so you don't want to be going to the shift shack too often.
Well, you see, you'd know everyone there.
See, the shift shack, right? So for example, the shift shack would be the size of the studio. It is a derelict building, outbuilding, and there'd be two DJs in there
playing
all night.
This is a very small studio now.
It's incredible. Yes, exactly.
So it's a small
I'm what, 5'3", and I go into the shift shack at about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm bounced in and carried in bouncing by everybody else's body. My feet were not touching the ground for a good 45 minutes.
Oh, so the shift shack is full of people.
It's a sardine shack, yes.
All
exactly
right.
Of smiling, happy, glitter filled people who are just coming in.
Lights on or off?
Off, but like with some disco balls, do you know? Oh. But there's art installations in the woods. It's just an absolute
very
sensation.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, go back to the shift shack. Never mind the art. Okay, and just give me remind me of the name of the festival again.
It is Another Love Story, and I would hurry up and get your tickets because it's not just that partying thing. There's very gentle stuff as well, and the food
is
gorgeous.
Seats as well.
There are seats, are people to chat to and make friends with.
Declan Burke, you were speaking earlier on about how you spent different periods of your life. Giving yourself over to classical music for one period, giving yourself over to jazz music for another period. So I'm guessing that the choice that you have for us in terms of music, in terms of jazz music, is related to that time that you spent listening to jazz.
It very much is. Specifically the Blue Note label, which, you know, as a complete neophyte when it came to jazz, this was a complete revelation for me. For people who, like me, until very recently, don't know about the Blue Note label, it was established in 1939, German Jewish refugees who discovered this music did not know what they were listening to, but they knew they loved it, and they just literally went out into the streets of New York, went to the clubs and said, play whatever you want, we will record it. And they recorded Miles Davis, Thelonious Monk, Horace Silver, Bud Powell, Sonny Rollins, John Coltrane. You know, it's a roll call of the jazz greats, and the kind of Blue Note served as a springboard. Art Blakey, who's the artist I'm going to talk about here, probably not as much of a household name as those artists, but he should be. Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. Buhena's Delight is one of the last of a kind of series of classic reissues that Blue Note have been to start early last year, and I think it's April is when it'll finish up this year. And Buhena's Delight is one of the April issues. It's kind of, you know, again, someone who's not an expert, what I'm told is it kind of signals the move from hard bebop into a much more kind of complex, melodic, harmonious type of jazz that was kind of going to lead into the kind of West Coast sound and much more complex type of jazz. And Art Blakey, what I like about, I'm not a big fan of jazz drumming as a rule, but he's an incredibly generous band leader. You would hardly know he's here on this album half the time. Other times, of course, he's knocking lumps out of the studio walls, which is terrific too. Terrific album. It's been remastered. Rudy Van Gelder was the in-house producer with Blue Note. They're using his production, and that's what's been remastered. So I'm really looking forward to hearing that version of the album.
Right, and we have a track from it here. Backstage Sally is the track. Let's have a listen and get a sense of what you're talking about. A track called Backstage Sally there from Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, one of the releases on the Blue Note label that Declan Burke is looking forward to next year. You were also saying, as we were listening to that, Sinead, that there's quite a great representation of female artists on the Blue Note label.
Yeah, I mean, I used to... There's been loads of those compilations over the years, and I discovered loads of women. And I think it was Marlena Shaw, Woman of the Ghetto, a song that's been so unbelievably sampled. And that Remember Me, remember that song that's like been sampled by Blue Boy, I think, was that song. So loads of, you'll recognise lots of that music has been sampled from Nelson. You just said about Nora Jones as well, which is really interesting.
Yeah,
there's a documentary last year, brilliant, I think it was BBC4, but Nora Jones tends to get written out of the Blue Note story, you know, by the jazz purists. But in fact, Nora Jones, Blue Note was on its uppers when Nora Jones literally walked in off the street with a three-track and said, I'd like to record a Blue Note. And they were going, oh, really? And then, you know, basically, she shot them back to the top of the charts.
From there, it went upwards. Another festival you're sending us off to this time, Kate.
Yes.
Kate Brennan-Harding, heading north to Outburst.
Yes. Now, this is a different type of festival. This is an arts festival. So there's lots of sitting down opportunities as well as dancing opportunities. Basically, this will be going into its 14th year in 2020. It is set up by the LGBT community, mainly Ruth McCarthy. And it's set up especially in Belfast, where I think with the political landscape, you know, things are much more homophobic. I know I've experienced that when I go up there. I can feel it instantly. It's really polarizing. Outburst comes along in November. It's about 10 days. Ruth herself goes around the world looking for amazing queer art, queer activists. And what happens is she will bring artists from, for example, there was an artist from Argentina the year I was up there. She will also then commission, alongside her committee, will commission stuff to happen. So, for example, funding was made for a DUP, an opera, which was held in Outburst last year. And that's actually gone over to London now. It's going to be put out there. That's Connor Mitchell's opera play with the Belfast Ensemble. The entire point of the festival is to highlight our voices. I say our because I'm part of the LGBT community. It's to highlight and it's to make fun of, to make peace with and to give safe space all around Belfast for those 10 days. It also combines music, it combines visual arts. The time that I was up there, it was something else, because what happens is for the Dublin Fringe, there's an Outburst Award. So a playwright will end up getting their play taken up to Belfast.
So it's in Dublin here during the Fringe Festival, then it goes up as part of Outburst.
Exactly. So like what I really recommend going to, regardless of what, wherever on an umbrella you fit, do you know what I mean? It's worth going up because it's got something really, really important to say. It's voices that are still oppressed. It's voices that are, you know, in need of laughing about a situation that they've ended up in, especially, say, for example, with some of the comments that maybe the DUP would make around gay rights.
Well, like, given that the title of the opera was Abomination, yes. I think we probably have a sense of the sort of comments that are made.
Yeah, like, for example, there's another group called Queertopia, and what they do is they put on a complete cabaret. Now, it's, you know, that kind of DIY-style cabaret that's was put on one of the nights. And what they have is they've got 12 different people of varying genders, and what they're doing is making mockery and fun of the things that are usually thrown at them. So it's something that I found like brilliant and very much necessary for Belfast.
Right, so Outburst in November.
It's usually the second and third week.
Right, so a little bit later into the year. But you mentioned earlier on that you had been spending a lot of time in Galway, and Galway 2020 is obviously going to be such a big thing this year, Sinead. Got off to a rocky enough start. Do you think it's past that now and we can move onwards and upwards? Does the programme look good in your mind?
Yeah, I think once the programme has been announced, and I think everybody knows that these kind of year-long projects are massive, really hard to put together, absolutely exhausting, and a lot of very good people were involved and are involved and are trying to do their best with it. There's 30 projects celebrating the Irish language, 125 world premieres, 135 Irish premieres, so you get a sense of the scale of it. They decided to lay out the year in relation to the old Irish calendar, so you know it's Baltana, Lunasa, all of that.
And also means that they'll start a little bit later, won't start today, it's going to start in February in fact.
Yeah, absolutely, and then you have, so they've decided to take landscape, language and migration as sort of some of the themes. So there's a ton of things happening. I mean, there's Druid are going to do one act plays in various small towns. You have Celebration of Sing on the actual Aran Islands. I think they're doing Homer's Odyssey on various Galway beaches. So a lot of the stuff is site specific and outside. And two of the things that I chose that I'd like really like to see, one piece is called Waterlicht, and it's to responding to global warming. It's a Danish artist called Dan Rosgaard, and what he's going to do is take an area of Connemara and turn it into a virtual underwater world that you can sort of walk around. There's a podcast, you can hear things, it's very, very immersive, and it's asking people to think about water and sustenance and the world and the climate. That takes place in Connemara in October. And the other piece, I think, which sounds very, I think is very important as well, is called Unsung, and obviously it's going to relate to Tuam. And when you say the word Tuam now, I know what we all think, which we do, which is mother and baby homes. So it's a piece, it's a kind of a collective reflection, and it wants a lot of people to come together to reflect on the lives across, not just in Tuam, but in various mother and baby homes, Bon Secours, all those places. So it's a light and sound installation. And I think I think they want large groups of people to come sort of take a moment to sort of reflect, because, you know, nearly 800 babies in a septic tank was not a chance for anybody to reflect, I think, and still isn't. So I think there's going to be a lot of very immersive, site-specific, outside things, but also political things and things that I think that you can use art to acknowledge awful things that have happened in this country. And they're just two of the things that I'd like to see. It's all on Galway2020.ie. There'll
be lots happening, obviously, throughout the year on that. I'm sure we'll be dealing with lots of it here on the programme.